Welcome to Ever Beyond on Wolf Spirit Radio. Be prepared to leave your belief systems behind as we go beyond teachers, beyond gurus, beyond duality, ever beyond, 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 beyond. Good evening. It's the 7th of April. I can't believe it. It's already, you might call it Easter Sunday. You could call it Resurrection Day. You could call it the couple of days after the full moon, after the equinox. You could say it's Passover. Tonight, we're going to go down to Egypt land. And so, without any further ado, I'm just going to introduce it with Louis Armstrong. Who else?
Thank you.
Oh, yes, and that was indeed Louis Armstrong, Satchmo. Let my people go. I just wanted to get into the theme of it, the whole mood of the evening, which is we're going to be talking tonight, or we, well, I will be talking tonight about the whole Exodus business. The whole, you know, what was all that about? What would happen if the scenario that happened that was seemingly recorded at the end of Genesis, if that was actually a real event, and say it happened today, what would that look like and how would it be reported? So, is the sound cutting out? Let me just check. No, it seems all right from here. I may see if anybody keeps having trouble with it, or if it is stuttering for everybody, I might be able to change the stream format. I'm running at 32 at the moment. That should be enough. Yes. Right. So there's. Let me know if you guys all have the an appropriate sound. What I'm going to be talking about, some of you, I don't know who is familiar with this particular work. Okay, so what we're going to do is talk about Emanuel Velikovsky. I don't know if anybody, again, has heard of... it is cutting out. This is no good. All right, let's take it down even further. I don't know if I can change it on the fly. Yeah, can't get much less than that. Okay, I'm gonna. That's really gonna mess up my recording. I'm probably gonna have to do all this stuff. Hang on a second. I'm just gonna stop the stream and then restart it. So you may need to refresh. Very inconvenient of them. That's not good. But anyway, here we are. Okay, so that's stopped and restarted the stream. Meanwhile,
refresh. I have restarted the stream.
Okay. What happened there? Right, I did reboot my router earlier on, actually, and we'll see what I'm going to come up with. My PC, I don't know about anybody else, but I've had some really weird crashes this week. Suddenly my computers have spontaneously blue screened and died, and it's been pretty strange, very random, weird computer incidents. I don't know if anybody else has had any of that, so I'll look at in the chat room. Meanwhile, so back to the story. Way back down in Egypt land, there was a group of artisans, and they were, I believe, I mean, a lot of this is to my belief system, and a lot of this is based on the book. Right, okay, let me just tell you about the book. The book is called Worlds in Collision by Emanuel Velikovsky. It came out in about 1950. Velikovsky was a contemporary of Albert Einstein. He was a fellow scholar, and his speciality was astronomy and ancient records and ancient language. I just saw that when I'm on this. Totally good. Right, so we have now... this record that was made by Velikovsky, there is one lecture that's available by him, and I don't think it's very much about this. He wrote books on various other things, and was also trying to sort of reconcile biblical timeline differences with the rest of the world. But essentially, at this time, he did a study of this period of time, which is about 3,500 years ago, and discovered a very interesting thing, that all over the world there were these records that all kind of matched up, and I'm going to go into them in a little way further, but just to say that this is the source information of this story here, that I have then, you know, added a little bit of my own interpretation and addition. So a vast amount of this is opinion. A lot of it is actual records that were kept by astronomers from all over the world independently. And perhaps we can all put together, and I'll be opening up the phone lines later. Yes, there we go. Thank you very much. The ebook database. Thank you, Swami. Very good man. He's written this book. I found the book was a very easy book to read. He's written some other books which weren't so easy, but I found this one, perhaps because of the subject matter, it was kind of close to my heart, or something. But it was a very much easier book to read than the rest of his. There's ones called Ages in Chaos, I think, and I don't know, it was a real trudge to get through that book, but Worlds in Collision was much easier, much more flowing and readable.
So,
what's it all about, Alfie? What's it all about? So, 3,500 years ago, there was a group of artisans that were under contract. Now, another word for contract is bond. And another word for being under contract, therefore, is bondage. We have had a redefinition of that word to imply that it's a slavery. But I don't believe it was a slavery. I believe it was a contract. And I believe that the contract could finish at any time. And I believe that that's what happened. And there may have been some complaints from the pharaohs and may have been, you know, because what imagine, like suddenly all of your artists and your builders and your jewelers and your, you know, all the people that were making your life easy for you suddenly decide to go. Now, why did they decide to go? Well, something told them something was happening. Perhaps they had this as their astronomers could see this coming. But the story goes like this. There was a comet. It appeared to be like a comet. It was huge. Not just any old comet, not just like these pathetic things that we've seen, sort of, oh, there's a comet in the sky. Where is it? Oh, don't know. It's sort of up there, over there. You know, if you squint your eyes and you can see this little kind of glowing glob. No, this was a comet. It was huge. It was the size of the Earth. Big ball of fire coming very close to us, you know, approaching us, you know, zzz, coming our way. And the story is that the comet came up and brushed really, really close to this planet. If you imagine what would happen if this were to happen today. Certainly, NASA probably wouldn't tell you it was happening. And we would look at, you know, we would see this thing in the sky. There would probably be earthquakes. I mean, we've seen earthquakes with tiny little comets. So let's see what happens to that. We have... No, James, not whips and chains. under contract. And so anyway, you have all these people, they're intelligent, they're bright, they're Atlanteans, they've got all the old Atlantean technologies. and knowledge passed down through their times, and they presumably also have records and books and stuff. What were the books written on? Perhaps they were written on plates of metal. They, you know, because parchment, paper, you know, all these things would just over thousands of years they would dissolve. Copper or gold would be probably the perfect method of preserving texts. So they may have had these enormously heavy metal books to keep all their ancient records in. So, oh my god, what's happened to Tremjar? Some chronic, I wish. Well, so there was a civilization, they had technology, they lived a very nice life in a nice, warm, fertile land. Medina. Al Medina. See, I knew it would come to me eventually. Al Medina is the name of this city on a hill. And that's where the artisans all lived. You know, they lived in their own place and they would come down and travel and where they were under contract to decorate a temple or something like that, boom, they would do it, they would colour it, and then, you know, probably scoot back home. So they were probably used to travelling and you know, staying in tents and hanging out and being like what we would call itinerant or semi-itinerant, because they would have a home base up in Al-Medina in the mountains. So they would have astronomers, and presumably the astronomers would start seeing this thing coming. They would, you know, they would start to hear about reports of earthquakes from elsewhere, and then this large body starts approaching the Earth. Now, when you have something very, very large like that, it will have some kind of gravitational pull, will it not? Yes, it may, they say. Yeah. So you could imagine that lava might be drawn to the surface, and we would have volcanoes erupting all over the shop. Other effects. Now, let's have a look at some of the possible effects of a large body that moves past the Earth. It depends how far away it is, but say it came so close that the atmosphere of the Earth and the atmosphere of this planet mixed together, that we'd get residues of this planet in our atmosphere. What would happen? Oh, I wish it was made into a movie. I hope so. Yeah, the Book of Moroni and the Book of Mormon. And it's in a way there's a kind of a parallel story here. But back to the worlds in collision. So we're up in Al Medina. The astronomers say there's stuff coming. Presumably. The Egyptians are not so aware of this, because it may have been the artisans, the Atlanteans, who were actually, you know, in charge of technologies. A lot of them are nowadays. So we have the Medinites, the artisans, and they're all milling around, wondering what to do. Then there's this other character. Now, I'm not entirely sure. This is, again, going to be conjecture. But I believe that there was a pharaoh who was known as Tutmosis. And there's not much difference between Tutmosis and Moses, is there? Especially if Tut was a kind of, what's the word? Like a title or something like that, Sir Moses, like Tutankhamun, and we know his name is built up of Ankh and Amun and Tut. So perhaps Moses and Tutmosis are the same being. We don't know. When when something like this is happening and people know about it, there are two responses, at least two responses, but the two responses are, oh, you're just talking rubbish, everything's fine, nothing's going to happen, tomorrow's going to be just like today. You know, we hear this all the time, especially here, you know, us lot. We're all going, oh yes, the reptilians are all being destroyed, you know, there's going to be global event happening soon, and everybody else is going, yeah, yeah, yeah. So presumably there was a bit of yeah, yeah, yeah down in those days. Also, yet another strange groaning, earth sounds and whole city evacuates. Well, this is the kind of thing we're talking about. So, say there was a comet coming today, and we see earthquakes all over the way, and all these different, what you'd call signs, you know, effects of this. When the thing came so close that there was a so many volcanoes erupting that the ash caused clouds in the sky to form and block out the light from the sun, so no longer could they see anything. And indeed, we're told of 3 days of darkness, perhaps even more days of darkness. Now, the other thing that says that they say is that the earth rotated in a different direction in those days. Now, if you think about it, when you're looking south towards the sun, the sun goes from your left to your right. If the sun was going the other way, i.e. from right to left, that would be the sort of natural process of things, wouldn't it? You know, things would start on the right and go to the left. And hey, guess what? Ancient languages that were based around this time or before, they wrote from right to left. Again, this is my personal conjecture. Make of it of what you will. Comet usually delivers in 3 weeks. So we have this comet approaching. It's come along, and probably it might be a good opportunity to leave Dodge, get out of Dodge. And that's what I believe Moses, plus a group of these Atlanteans, did. Now, whether Moses's lineage was, as it says in the Bible, well, who's to say? Because we don't know. We have no way of knowing whether what was written in the Bible was actually true. However, when you look at the books of written in the book of Exodus. When you look at Exodus, in the light of this is a potentially historical document about a massive drama that happened, it takes on a whole new life. And so we have this process. Now, it could have been about this time, could have been this equinox time that this thing happened, because that's when the Exodus is celebrated. At the festival of Passover. Oh, have we lost sound? Hope not. No, I've still got sound. No, it's all happening in my end. Anyway, if you lose sound, it's your problem. Meanwhile, back in Egypt, we have an approaching comet. We have people who are working in temples, and they're probably thinking, I wouldn't like to be inside one of these temples when there was an earthquake around here. It's not a safe place for me to be, working in all these underground chambers, and you know, they're just blocks of stone. It's just limestone that could easily crack and fall. You know, so I don't want to work there anymore. Let's get the heck out of here. And so they'll say, right, okay, well, we can't really finish these temples because we've got to go now. And you might imagine that there was a bit of a bit of resistance from Ramses or whoever it was the pharaoh at the time. There's also stories about an attempted coup by Nefertari, and this all may be happening all around the same time. So there's all these things going on. There's probably wars as well. Anyway, so we have a group of people. They all decide, right, okay, let's go. Let's get the heck out of here. And at the same time, there's a comet approaching. Now, if you're here's the kind of mind picture. You want to picture a comet coming very close to the Earth, but not coming from behind the Earth. It's kind of coming from beside the Earth, and it's going to cross over between the Earth and the Sun. Because what's going to happen then is that the tail of the comet... Now, we've got to remember, alright? So say the comet... Oh God, we've got to go back from here. Alright, so what's the comet? The comet is Dirty Snowball. That's what they say. Comet's a dirty snowball. Alright, a dirty snowball. What's a dirty snowball? It means it's got water and it's got rock, yeah? Where does that come from? That's another long, long story, and that ties in with the Sasquatch and the planet Meldek, and all sorts of stuff. But basically, there's a comet that is a big lump of ice, and inside the ice is made of frozen material. It's made of frozen sea, because I believe it came from a broken planet that had reformed itself into a big spherical lump, and the planet was a water planet called Maldek, and that's also the green stone that we call Moldavite when it lands, you know, essentially that the that inside this sphere of ice are frozen creatures, frozen bacteria, frozen fish, frozen frogs, amphibians, all sorts of things, right? People, other stuff, little animals, this is also possibly the source of the Fortean fish falls as well, you know, a big lump of ice with a shoal of fish comes to Earth, it melts in the atmosphere and blap, you know, a load of fish fall from the sky. So anyway, so the comet passes between the Earth and the Sun, and we get the tail of the comet mixing in with our atmosphere. So there are various layers of different levels of evaporation of this ice, and the stuff that is coming off that in the solar wind. So when you get one layer, perhaps it may have bacteria in there. That bacteria will come into our atmosphere, and boom, you have plagues, you have diseases that didn't exist before, they've come from elsewhere. And then perhaps there are insect larvae, and boom, the larvae hatch, because insects can survive the deep space, and boom, you have a plague of locusts, or, you know, strange insects. You can have frogs' eggs, and, you know, frogs can survive vast periods of time. And again, boom, you have a whole bunch of frogs and toads falling from the sky. You get my drift. What I'm saying is, and what Velikovsky was saying, was that the plagues, the 10 plagues, came from the tail of this comet passing across the Earth. So, this is something that has been documented in many, many ancient times. Is the idea that the Earth was was spinning from, you know, in one direction. And as this huge body passes in front of it, the pull, the magnetic gravitation pull, will slow the Earth to a stop and then cause it to spin the other way. And then carry on its way. And that's what I believe has happened in this period, that the Earth stood still and then reversed, and that it was recorded in Peru that the same thing happened. They said the sun rose once in the east and then once in the west. So nothing to eat the insects, that's right. So that's the story, or one of the possible explanations behind the idea of the 10 plagues. Perhaps they weren't, well, yes, they enumerate them. There may have been more, but basically it was the result of this stuff happening, the tail of the comet passing through. Okay, so we got the tail of the comet. We have 3 days of darkness. Now, 3 days of darkness might mean that this planet was in front, this comet was in front of the sun, and it would block out the sunlight, and yeah, you could have 3 days of darkness. And then it would pass. Now, it may be that the place where it was when it was at the between the Earth and the sun was not so close to the Earth, but in, you know, close enough to block out the sunlight. And then it comes closer to the Earth. At this point, you know, all hell has broken loose. We're not having a good time of it at all, because we have no more sunlight. We have volcanic clouds all over the place. So back to our artisans and I'm having so much trouble with my words today. It's unbelievable. Can't remember anything. Anyway, sorry about this. You're listening to me, and I'm talking absolute rubbish. No, but I hope you're getting the gist of this, and you can do your own research. Swami posted the PDF. You can read this PDF for yourself. It's called The Worlds in Collision. So, yes, there's algae blooms and all sorts of insect eggs floating in space. Eggs in space! Hang on, here we go. Eggs in space! who remembers The Muppet Show? Meanwhile, so obviously these people, they want to get the heck out of there. The Egyptian dynasty has been scuppered. There was a coup by Nefertari. She kills Ramses, you know, the wives and all that business. So there's stuff going on there. So everybody wants to get the heck out. Now, another piece of sort of circumstantial evidence is that there are certain temples that somehow, suddenly, just stop. You know, they were progressing with their hieroglyphs and their painting, and then suddenly it just stops. For no apparent reason, the friezes are not completed. They just stop. They have no more decoration, no more carvings. And you can see, you know, that it's carved first and then it's painted in and all this business. So we could say that that's probably the time when they just, you know, down tools, let's go. You know, let's get the heck out of here. Let's see what we can take. So there is the whole story of the Ark of the Covenant and what that is. Maybe we can get into that if anybody wants to call.
Carry me.
So we have the... What's that? Where is it? Is it not dark in the land of the Goshen? Yes. So anyway, we have our comet approaching, getting very very close, and so we got a whole bunch of, there's something like a million people. Now I don't know how long this is going to take. You know, you're going to move the best part of, you know, maybe 500,000, a million people, all sort of tramping along, just getting as far as they can. Now, from the idea, it was that they were in Cairo, perhaps on the eastern side of the Nile bank, and that they would then go down all the way down to the bottom of the Sinai Peninsula. Now, you can all look at Google Earth to check this little factoid out. But at the bottom of the Sinai Peninsula, at the mouth of the Red Sea, I think it is. It is the Red Sea. Oh, my brain is so useless today. But you can see that there is a land bridge under the water. You can see it very plainly on Google Earth and see that. We have then. Here's the next part of it. You're going to like this one. Okay, so what happens when a huge body passes close to the Earth? It's going to draw up the ocean, isn't it? It's going to draw up the water in the ocean. Now, it doesn't have to go very far, because we've seen that, you know, a 10-foot tsunami can be quite disastrous. But the idea is that as this planet goes by, the ocean is drawn up, which will then drain the ocean at the coast. This is the coast that I'm talking about. Now, if you drain that water, probably maybe only 100 feet, you will actually expose a land bridge across from the bottom of the Sinai Peninsula across to Saudi Arabia. We're going to go into Saudi Arabia in a little while, but just if you go to Google Earth and have a look at this particular position, you'll see this land bridge. So, rather than wandering around Sinai, I believe that they went down to the bottom of Sinai and crossed over that land bridge when the waters had receded because of the planetary attraction of the water. So we got a dry place, and everybody kind of squishes across this marvelous, amazing appearance of dry land where there was sea. Now, they did say that there was a great big wall of water, but maybe they were exaggerating. Maybe they really thought that the waters parted. But my theory here, and that I'm putting forward here, is that the levels just dropped until it drained away enough of the Red Sea so that the land bridge was exposed. Okay, so everybody's crossing, and oh look, there's the Egyptians behind us. Maybe they're, well, we don't know whether they're hostile or not, but maybe they're happy, maybe they're wanting to come with us. You never know. Whatever happens, it's probably a bit muddy at the bottom there, and probably chariots get stuck in the mud, and chariot wheels have been found in this place. There are many, obviously there's lots of archaeologists who, with a Christian or Judaic base, they want to prove their Bible. So this is, this is what it's all about. The whole Moses story thing. So yeah, this is Moses. Anyway, so we have the waters parting, or apparently parting, but really it's draining. You know, exposing the land bridge. People go across the land bridge, and then the planet, the comet, passes, and as it passes, it lets go of its gravitational pull on the water, and the water comes flooding back in. Now, we have modern words. We have the word tsunami. But I'd say that was more or less, you know, whether it was slow or it was fast, it would be certainly pretty devastating if you're halfway across and the waters were to start rising again. It wouldn't be a very nice time. And that's probably what happened to the Egyptian people in their chariots trying to follow. So, now, we're all across the water. The Egyptians are half under the water. The rest of them are in chaos. There's a military coup, or there's a takeover by Nefertari and her team. They probably murdered various of the pharaohs. The whole Egyptian dynasty is in pieces. They no longer have their temple builders, and probably, you know, the people who were the, you know, the pharaonic advisors and all of those people, they're all now in Saudi Arabia. Now, let's just go back into Saudi Arabia. Now, there are places in Saudi Arabia where you can find the exact descriptions that were given in the Bible of this massive rock, and it's in a place called Midian. And Midian is supposedly one of the places that Moses, or Tutmosis, lived when he was younger, and so he knew the territory, he knew where it all was. And again, you can look on Google Earth and you'll find this place, and there's this massive great rock that is split down the middle. I mean, it's a great big rock sticking up into the air, you know, and it's got a crack right down the middle. In fact, it's quite separate now. And there's evidence that there was water. And we're not talking about, you know, just a little trickle. We're talking about a lot of water. There's a pond, or the evidence that there was a pond there. A lake, more like a lake. I mean, it was like big, you know, it's hundreds of meters wide. And so this is possibly the origin of the story where Moses tapped the rock when everybody's thirsty and ba-boom. Somehow he knew. You know, I'm not saying that there wasn't any kind of other, you know, that he wasn't given guides or there are other people helping him. In fact, I've semi-written, I haven't really written it at all, I haven't even started writing it, but I got it in my head, is a Doctor Who story, whereby Doctor Who meets Moses in the desert, and his TARDIS is it repairs. It's not looking like a police box. It's blending in with its circumstances, so it's trying to look like a bush, but because of the circuitry and it was all going wrong, this thing's on fire, and so it's like looks like a burning bush. And you know, and Doctor Who speaks to Moses, and suddenly the bush is talking to Moses and all this stuff. And anyway, so I've had a sort of semi idea about a story, Doctor Who and the Comet of Doom, based on this story. Oh yes, well, thank you, Anon. Yes. Meanwhile, so again, this is from Velikovsky, Worlds in Collision. He's saying that for a very long period of time after this, the world was subjected to what we would now call, now we've got words for it nowadays, a nuclear winter. And I believe that that's what is the name for what was then called, or what has been translated into wandering in the wilderness, or in other languages they called it the twilight of the gods. Now, if you can imagine, a nuclear winter is like you know, dust clouds in the sky, and so in daytime it was like barely grey, very much like living in Aberdeen. a kind of grey, it would have to be a very large body of water. It was a very large body of water, and you know, again, if you look at Google Earth, you can see there's a kind of pond-like bowl there. Within the context of where we're at in 1500 years ago, they didn't have words for anything like that. So they didn't have a word for this kind of weird half darkness or almost darkness, and crops couldn't grow and everything died because of the, you know, all these bacteria. It wasn't a very pleasant place, and it probably wasn't, you know, they probably started out with a million, they probably didn't end up with a million, it was probably a lot less than that. It wouldn't have been a very good thing. And so it may be likely, you know, we've talked about, we've been told that, you know, if we had a nuclear war, this nuclear winter could last 30 or 40 years. So it's no stretch of the imagination for our modern minds, with our modern concepts, to perceive that this could well likely happen, that there would be so much volcanic dust in the sky that there would be no light, no usable light, no useful light. And people would die of diseases because they couldn't get their vitamin D. Food would be very scarce. And who knows? Who knows what would happen? And so I think that the book of Exodus is really the story of how a group of people survived this rather nightmarish scenario. So what other? I'm just trying to think. There's also a place that fits the description of Elijah's cave as well. So presumably they settled this area for quite a long time. It took about 50 years to get to Jericho. Now, when we're talking about Jericho, this is another interesting little thing. So 50 years later, and during this time, the skies are gradually clearing, things are slowly getting better. So they're looking for a better place to live, and presumably there are other groups of people, other tribes that are making use of this this terrible time, raiding and looting and war and all of that sort of stuff. We're looking at a very bleak kind of scratching out a living. These people will probably end up really tough. So what's happening to Venus? What's happening to this thing in the sky? Well, there's this comet which carried on. It didn't crash into the Earth, it didn't bang into the Earth, but that it did pass very, very, very close enough to call it a collision. You know, it didn't go it didn't hit like billiard balls, but it certainly made an awful mess of our orbit, and I believe that we used to have a 260-day orbit, which is why the calendar of the Mayans had this 260-day thing. Now, I'm not entirely sure how we can work this out, whether it was 260 rotations per orbit, or whether it was a slower orbit. I'm inclined to think that the rotation changed, but it could be a combination of both. But during this time, we're going from 260 rotations per year to 360 rotations per year. And things kind of settled down a little bit after all that. You know, I'm jumping the gun. So we go back to Midian, not Medina. So we go from Al-Medina to Midian, which is an interesting parallel here. Perhaps they named it New Midian. Maybe it was like New Medina or something like that. Because so yes, Joshua, Yehoshua. Yehoshua, interesting, eh? So we have a group of people, and there's also astronomers amongst them, because they're still watching the skies. Eventually the sky's clear enough and they can see this thing scooting about in the sky. It's a rogue, because it's got an elliptical orbit now, and it's zooming past, zigzagging across the sky. And they calculated that it would take 50 years for the for this orbit to meet with the orbit of the Earth again. And so, yes, so they get up to this 50-year period and realize that there may be an opportunity here. So, what happens? This thing comes by again. Massive earthquakes all over the place. What do you think Jericho was about then, hey? Maybe that was just fortuitous. Maybe it had nothing to do with trumpets and drums. Although, we do say, we do note that the Tibetans figured out that they could move rocks with drums and horns. So perhaps there may be something to do with that. But also at the same time, that there were potentially earthquakes that could happen in the area, and crumble, 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 all the walls come down, all the citizens run away, and the new people moved in. They're a bunch of builders, they rebuilt the place, and there's Jericho, there's the beginning of Jericho. I don't know. Like I said before, this is all conjecture on my part, but it does seem to fit. So anyway, according to Velikovsky, this process goes on a lot. Every 50 years the orbits of the Earth and this body coincide again, presumably there's some amount of destruction that will go on. And so they came up with the idea of a jubilee. That because this is going to happen every 50 years, right, let's live 50 years at a time. So all transactions, everything is zeroed whenever this happens, whenever there's another coincidence of the two planets. And I think that's probably a pretty good idea, but it was a way of coping with the utter destruction, because you don't know who, you know, you might know someone 1 year and a year later they may be dead. They may owe you money, you may owe them money. So it's best if you know this stuff's coming, settle all your accounts just before it's going to happen. And that's what I believe the beginning of the jubilee is. That's where they get that. Joshua had harp, yeah. Very good. So yeah, I wish I could read all of your chat in the chat room. It's brilliant. You're getting into this. Does Al mean son of? No, Al means the. So you'll notice that there's lots of words in science which mean Al, which start with Al. Alchemy, algebra, Aldebaran. In fact, if you look at all the stars, a lot of them are called Al because it's their Arabic name. For instance, the three stars in the middle of Orion's belt are known as Al-Nitak, Al-Nilam, and Mintaka. And Al just means the. For instance, there's Aldebaran, which I think is the place, which means the place of Ra, Aldebaran. So karmic transitions, Transactions. Yeah, well, it's interesting. Yeah, so basically there's this Jubilee situation going on. Now, I'm going to fast forward this into the pre-Roman period of 2,800 years ago. That's 800 BC. Excuse me, I'm just going to have a quick... This 800 BC. And from what Velikovsky has written, that at that time, finally, something had to give, right? And that the planet that the comet is zooming around, and it finally strikes another planet. Thankfully, it's not ours. It's like an enormous cosmic game of billiards. It hits Mars, which then sends Mars scooting our way. So they say. There is a vast amount of discharge, electrical discharge, that goes as Mars comes past our atmosphere. Friction and electrostatic forces cause a huge lightning bolts. You couldn't really call them lightning bolts because they're, you know, they're unbelievably huge, about, you know, millions of times bigger than a lightning bolt, because it's leaving the marks all over the surface of the planet. And one of them is, now again, it's a name and I can't remember it. But it's possible to find it. Okay, there's a lake, and they say it's a volcanic lake, but there's no volcanoes, and it's in the north of Italy. And they say that before the days of Rome, there was a city there, and suddenly that city was essentially vaporized by this thing. That's the result of Mars scraping by our planet. Finally, it takes our year. It lengthens our year by a matter of 5 days. So it could maybe reduce the rotational speed of the planet. It was more likely, or perhaps the orbital speed. But I think the orbital speed is determined by the sun. So it could well be just a matter of getting the rotations out of sync again. But that takes it from 360 days to 365 days for a solar year. So essentially, I mean, let's talk 365 rotations of the planet for its orbit. And we were talking the other night with Rebecca about the you know, the orbit of the moon, and the day of the moon is the same. So that, I believe, is a potted history of what the Book of Exodus is saying. A potential origin for the quote children of Israel, unquote. A reason for the collapse of the dynasties of Egypt. A reason for lots of things, a reason for the rotation of the planet. Now, there is evidence that in the there is, now is it the temple? No, it's not the temple of Karnak. It'll come back to me, as it will. There is a temple in Egypt, and you can probably find it on Google Images as well, that has a frieze, a stone carving on the wall. Now, you don't make stone carvings for just frivolous reasons, you know, it's got to be serious, especially if it's in a temple. So it has to be very significant. On this frieze are two panels. On one panel, the stars are shown in one orientation, and in the second panel, they're shown in the opposite orientation. This, I believe, and Velikovsky believes, is the evidence that the Earth rotated in the opposite direction at one point, and then at another point rotate in the current direction that we have. So remember earlier I was saying that when you when the sun is going the other way, it's going from right to left, and that's how Hebrew is, and now it's going from left to right, and that's how most modern languages, i.e. based on Greek and Latin, which are relatively modern languages, are formed. So that's another little historical snippet that I keep turned on. That's another little snippet of that. So Sakara, thank you very much, Catherine. Oh, it's great to have friends who can think and they've got brain cells. Oh. Excellent, and thank you, Tobias. That's really kind of you. Bless your heart. So, does anybody want to call in? Because I've been blethering on for over an hour, and I think I need a cup of tea. So I really would like to go and have a cup of tea. So I'm going to put on a tune. Let's see what we've got. Oh, Jupiter and Beyond. I think this is a bit strange. Hang on, let me just see what this sounds like. It's 15 minutes long. I'm not going to play all this. No, that's a bit creepy. Oh, let's have this one. This will do. Again, from... Oh, no, that's only tiny. There's a big one. Oh, that's the main title. From the Viennese Philharmonic Orchestra. Oh, no, that's only 10. All right, it's not very big. Let's have something else in there as well after that. So, I'm just going to take a little break. This is... Oh, yes. Let's have two very unusual pieces of music. First of all, also Spra Zarathustra. Now, very interestingly, Zarathustra is also known as Zoroaster, and he was the main prophet of the religion of the people at this time. So, there's a link. It's one of the most ancient religions. So, this is also Sprach Zarathustra, and after that I'm going to have some Celtic mouth music which is going to blow you away, and I can't even pronounce its name. It's something like Anboan Anbech and Fianola, which basically means Fianola's Buffy. So anyway, I'll be back in a minute. Do call in. Thank you. Well, there you go. I hope you enjoyed those two very unusual and very disparate tunes. Is there a thematic link? Well, maybe. The Celtic song, I believe. I'm very much into Michael Cesarion's theory that the people from Atlantis also went to Ireland at some point, and that is the most unusual sounding music I've ever heard, and I wonder if that's how Atlantean music may have sounded, you know, harmonics and all that stuff. A bit also like that, is it Romanian? Bulgarian folk music, which has the harmonies based on the minor on the second rather than on the third. Good stuff. So let's invite call-ins now. I'm logged into the Wolf Spirit switchboard, so you can contact me on Skype on the Wolf Spirit switchboard. Do send me a message first, and you can also call in on USA, which is 1+1-775-657-5973. Or, as my clone has told you,
call in on 1-775-657-5973. That's 1-775-657-5973. This is Wolf Spirit Radio.
Can't place that voice. Sounds really familiar to me. Anyway. Yeah, so do, after all that, somebody call in, because I can talk for an hour on my own, as I just have, and I've kind of squeezed it all out. I would really love to discuss some of these ideas with you. The Irish mouth music comes from an album called Celtic Folkweave, which is by Mick Hanley and Michael O'Donnell. Gosh, let's have a look. I'm just going to pull up the album cover. Michael O'Donnell, 1974. Michael O'Donnell and Mick Hanley. And yes, it's An Bochan a Beg Fionningula. Translated means Fiona's Boffies. Strange. So fantastic album of a very unusual. That is the most unusual. There are some regular kind of folk tunes on it. in Gaelic as well as in English. All sorts of stuff, beautifully played and properly recorded, and, you know, on real open reel 2-inch decks and stuff like that in proper studios. Marvelous stuff. So if I maybe I can I post? No, I can't. No, I can't post that anywhere really, can I? I'll have to upload it first. Anyway, I'll see. You can get the torrent from Demonoid, but it's called Celtic Folk Weave, and it's one of my favourite albums. So yes, where is everybody? Speak to me, people. Speak to me. So the implications of this are that it wasn't anything to do with gods or of supreme beings, unless you want to class a planetary body as a supreme being, which is a possibility, or, you know, other supernatural things, that it was a kind of entirely natural process, but one which was unusual. I mean, you don't get a planetary collision every day. You actually had, I don't know how many situations like this the Earth has been in. Perhaps it's been in lots. It's hard to tell, you know. Not unless there's a great big kind of gouge at the top of it. There is it on Mars? I can't remember if it's on Mars or Venus. There is an enormous gouging scrape somewhere. I might just be making that up, though. Must be making that up. Anyway, the implications are that what the Bible is a record that was put together because of the destruction of all other previous records. There was nothing left. There was devastation. People had to move very quickly, and so they had to relearn their history. And it's called the Books of Moses. I suppose, in a way, you could say that what would be a modern equivalent of that? A bit like the Books of Shakespeare. Perhaps Shakespeare pulled together some traditional stories. Traditional esoteric stories, wrote his own versions of them, and collected them together in a book. You could say that he may have been Moses may have been more like an editor. He created five books of records that kind of explain where we're at and how we got here and what the problems were, and how to get around them, how to get around sort of the issue of what would happen if we hit another planetary collision, which some people say that's might be what's happening. What would happen if suddenly tomorrow there was a massive explosion in space, and just about everybody was wiped out by the radiation from this explosion? There were a few survivors. What would you do? What would be the necessary thing to have as a record? You'd need to know your history. You'd need to know how you got there. People very easily lose their history. I mean, if you think about even if we just follow that on newspapers, we could easily be mistaken that we've made big mistakes in the past, and we're doomed to repeat them because we don't know that we've done that before. We've gone down that past path. Oh wow, that's a long. Yeah, Machu Picchu sea level. Yes, the idea that Machu Picchu actually was at sea level at some point and then was thrust incredibly quickly. I mean, hundreds of meters a day up into the skies. Yeah, so there's all these accounts of the Earth in travail, of the Earth being traumatized, and us along with it. And if we don't keep records, if we don't keep a diary, for instance, of our own history, we are apt to forget how things were. Especially if, you know, if every day is a day-to-day survival situation. You know, we got predators to deal with, we've got weather to deal with, we've got all these other things to deal with. We don't get to the basic. We don't get, you know, we're having to deal with the basic. We don't get to the, how do I put this, the slightly more academic things. I mean, imagine if we had, if we were all supposed to survive, we wouldn't be able to afford the time. You know, we'd be growing food and stuff like that. We wouldn't be able to afford the time to study. You know, scholarly activities are the result of a very high civilization. We'd need to have some kind of record keeper. So that's why we would have storytellers. And at night, they would probably sit around the campfire and tell their stories. Oh yes, let me just backtrack there. The pillar of fire and the pillar of smoke. I'd say that was a volcano, wouldn't you? You know, that you'd see the smoke in the daytime, and at night you'd see the smoke that would be lit up by the lightning and the glow from the magma inside. So that's that one. yeah, you gave all your vinyl away, all your records. Exactly. Now there is nothing to play. You know, in the old days, you could take a needle and a playing card, and you could rotate a 78 record underneath this needle, and it would actually play through the playing card. There's no way with our CD players and digital interfaces that we could actually listen to any music anymore through those mediums. So all of the, you know, if tomorrow our civilization lost all electricity, the only thing that would be left to listen to music, apart from, you know, real musical instruments, would be old 78 records. They're the only things. Magnetic tape might be wiped out. That's gone. You know, hard drives, there, well, that's magnetic tape as well. That's gone. CDs, optical drives, well, you need the magnetic memory of the machines, and of course you've got no electricity, so you can't play those, so that's gone. All that would be left are those wind up 1930s 78 record players, and the needles would wear out as well. The needles wear out on those things, but basically that would be all that would be left of mechanical recording devices of any kind. That's a sobering thought, isn't it? So, you think petrified dinosaur dung? There's a word for that. It's crot something. tiny crystals. Crystals of, yeah, anyway. Meanwhile, do call in 1-775-657-5973. Do call in and discuss this potential interesting situation about it. Where were we? So every year at this time, and this time I mean specifically the first full moon after the spring equinox, so I'm presuming that that's when that happened, that there was a full moon and there was a spring equinox. Now, that would also mean that the moon was on the other side of the Earth at the time that this this planet came by, so that it would be relatively safe from the gravitational influence as it passed. Yeah, we'd have to sing. And we'd have to sing the songs as a musician, yeah. Well, I don't know about, not much of a god. I don't want to be worshipped. Please don't worship. Anyway, like made a quantum CPU. Yeah. The story of Passover. Now, I was brought up as a Jewish boy, and my dad was Catholic, but I kind of sort of fell between the two stools, really. But I do remember the story of Passover, and it was something that my family encouraged me to sing. And you know, I know all the Hebrew words and all the little songs. Anyway, etc. Stuff like that. They were talking about this period of time. Obviously, it comes from a different angle. Now, when I was young, you know, we had to do this thing every year, and it was a chore. It was like, you know, you have this meal, and you're sitting around this table with all your family. The nightmare begins. And you have to sit around this table for hours and hours and hours before you actually get to eat anything. Everything has a symbolic meaning, and there's all these, you know, the Paschal lamb and the scapegoat and all that. Oh yeah, scapegoat, that's where this comes from. The moon was there or not is another matter. Yeah, oh yeah. Well, it's 3,500 years ago. I don't know when the moon arrived. Does anybody have an idea? But that's the temporal marker. The temporal marker for Passover is the first full moon after the spring equinox. The Christian festival, which we call Easter. Let me just come back here. Because somebody posted on Facebook earlier one of those little pictures, and there's a picture of a horned goddess with a very strangely placed navel. In English, it's written Easter. In Anglo-Saxon, it's Easter, E-A-S-T-R-E. In Babylonian, it's Ishtar. In Hebrew, it's Ashtaroth. And in Greek, it's Astarte, or Ashtart. And Ashtart is the Phoenician and Greek fertility goddess. Ashtaroth is the Hebrew name for the Canaanite fertility goddess. Ishtar is the Babylonian fertility goddess. And Easter is the Anglo-Saxon fertility goddess. So there already was a fertility festival going on there. At this time. Now that might be coincidental, or it may be part of the whole situation, because you know, this is a planetary disaster. After disaster comes rebirth, so perhaps it's the story of the rebirth after the disaster. And it may be something like the Thanksgiving idea that you know, that they get their first, you know, they did their first harvest, and this is what they got. You know, all that's left is watercress and star and bits of burnt chicken. So yeah, there's very symbolic foods during the Passover ceremony. I'll just run by them. The first one is the matzah, which if you've ever eaten, if you ever had one of these wraps that is made of a flat, soft bread. If you were to dry one of these things out, it would just be exactly like a matzah. So essentially, matzah is a dry, baked, unrisen, unleavened kind of biscuit bread. Presumably, they didn't have the yeasts, cultures. You know, in order to make bread, you have to have the yeast culture. And in order to, you know, they didn't have a shop, they didn't have a Walmart to go and buy your culture to add to your bread. You had to, you know, keep it in a jar, and you'd had to keep your cultures going. Presumably, they didn't have any when they left in a hurry. Imagine all the things you'd need to do. I mean, basically, these people had to bug out because it hit the fan. So 2 billion people living on the moon. Oh yeah, right. Okay. So yes, the Hebrews keep a lunar calendar because the sun was kind of spinning around the sky a bit. Yes. Anyway, when Jewish people celebrate the Passover. I'm just trying to think how much of a fertility thing is it. Just running through some of the things in my mind. There is the egg that is burned, interestingly enough. So perhaps that's something to do with radiation exposure and sterility. I don't know. There is watercress that is involved, known as carpas. There is bitter herb. What's that stuff called? Horseradish is used to represent the bitterness. Salt water, supposedly to represent the tears. Perhaps it's the parting of the sea. Who's to say? There is the shank bone of a lamb. Because the idea was that there was a lamb that was slaughtered and the blood was put on the doorposts so that the angel of death wouldn't come by there. Now, I don't know, maybe coincidental, maybe that the fact that they stayed in their homes during this period prevented them from getting the bacteriological fallout from the comet, so that the Egyptian children who were playing outside got infected, and the Jewish children that were sitting inside the homes were protected from the bacteriological fallout. Don't know, chemical warfare, who knows? You know, they have all these stories, all these little things, these supposed miracles and supposed curses from God, plagues. I hope that noise was your chair. Yeah. No, I if I have to do that, I normally fade my microphone down. You're spared that. So, where are we? So, yeah, so I was brought up with this story of, you know, and it was really, really dry and boring. We'd sit there for hours and hours and hours, and we'd sing all these songs and drone all these prayers, and then you have to ask this, why is this night all different? You know, what's all this? What's that? Asking all these questions, and when essentially the question that was in my mind is, when do we eat? Because the Passover food is different, because it none of it has any form of yeast in it, because as I said, there was no yeast in the desert group, or probably wasn't enough to go around. So they, you know, let's start a new tradition. We're going to eat stuff that's got no yeast in it. So for a period of 7 or 8 days. All Jewish households have a complete change of cutlery, of crockery. The house is cleaned spotlessly. Every crumb has to be removed from the house. The house is cleaned spotlessly beforehand, and then you start with these two ritual meals, one after the other. Presumably, the first one is the second one is, like, you know, you have to go and see people, you know, you have to go and join in with other people. So you is it like a Christmas meal or Thanksgiving? You might I would say it was the closest thing it would be to a kind of modern American thing. It would be Thanksgiving. There's a similar sense to that. As far as I can see, you know, not having participated in Thanksgiving, but there's all these different ritual foods that you're eating that have special significance, you know. So what else was there? There's the salt water. But anyway, the food is quite yummy, but it has no leavening in it. So we have, like, fried fish balls and boiled fish balls. That's what they call gefilte fish. I'm not going to talk about food because I'm just going to get hungry again. I only just ate. So we have that. To me, it was a very, very dry and boring thing until I read the Velikovsky book. And suddenly it all came to life, and it became like much more like a science fiction story than something that was taught in these old boring buildings, the synagogue and the church and all that stuff. And hopefully I may have brought your Easter's festivals, you know, in a certain kind of context, because we then, you know, we fast forward another 800 years after the thing, you know, we're now spinning at 365 a year, and there's this fellow, and then there's all this stuff, and you know, there's this meal, and the Last Supper is one of these Pesach meals, Passover meals. The name of it is called a Seder, which means order. You know, so you do things in a specific order. That's what the Last Supper was. So that's why Easter is based on the Jewish Passover, because the Good Friday meal, or it's probably the not so nice Thursday meal, would have been the Passover, and that's why it's locked in to the lunar calendar. So Good Friday is the Friday nearest the first full moon after the spring equinox, and that's how it sits, and that's how it's all calculated. And there are, I remember when I was working in University College as a computer man, and one of the jobs that I had to do God, I mean, nowadays it's all done for you, but the idea when we move to daylight savings time, that there's specific formulas for setting up daylight savings time, and one of them involved the March time, which was, it's on the fourth Sunday, the day after the third Saturday in March, unless that day happens to be Easter. So, in which case it's the week afterwards. And so I had to do all this research onto how do you determine the day of Easter. Every year, as you know, it's what they call a movable feast, and it's movable because it obeys the lunar calendar and not the Julian calendar, or the Gregorian calendar for that matter. And so I found that, you know, there are formulas, but they are hellishly complicated, and I had to phone up the Home Office, and I had to do lots of research, because we didn't quite have an internet then. We had the beginnings of what was the sort of internet, but I had to actually phone people, and well, luckily I worked in a university, so I could ask some intelligent people all this stuff. The date of Easter is a complex thing, but it does have a formula. It's much easier in the October. So why does it change in different parts of the world at different times? I don't know. Maybe it's the Dark Lodge's idea of messing us all up. So, do call in 1-775-657-5973. Do you have any information, any stories about this event? Oh, there is something else. There is something else. There is the word. Now, yes. You're going to love this one. It's a really good one. And it's in this book. You can check this out. It's absolutely in this book. At this time, 3,500 years ago, a word appeared all over the world. And you're going to die when you hear this word. All right? And my feeling is that this word is an onomatopoeic word. It's the word of a sound. It's the, you know, the enunciation of a sound. And I believe that this is the sound that the earth made once this body had passed, and it was making this enormous sound, and probably people were awed by it and thought, ah, this must be God. Okay, guess what? You're going to love this. This word is Yahu. Yes, Yahu. Yahoo.com. Now, it's very interesting. Because I'm a, you know, I was taught how to read Hebrew. There's this famous set of characters they call the Tetragrammaton. But in ordinary parlance, this word is pronounced Jehovah. Right? Now, that's the translation of a translation of a translation. But if you were to take the Hebrew letters, the Hebrew letters are Yod, Hey, Vav, hey. Now, the sound of yod is a teeny, teeny, tiny little character, and it means hand, is ya. And the sound of the letter hey is ha, obviously. It's a very, Hebrew is very much like a computer programming language. It's very interesting. The word vav has three different ways of being pronounced. And it's all to do with the diacritical, which is the little dots that make up the Hebrew vowels. And there are three ways this letter can be pronounced. If the dot is kind of halfway down the middle of it, it's pronounced u. If the letter has the dot on top of it, it's o. And if there is no dot at all, it's a v. And again, you've got a second h. Now, if you were to take the vowels, Hebrew is written without vowels, so it's like it's like consonants. It's all written in consonants, and it's a bit like reading text. And presumably, it was written in such a way to maximize the amount of space and minimize the amount of ink that you're using to do the scribing. So when it's written down, it's doing heavy breathing. It's emphysema. When it's written down, all you have are the four consonants, which, if you were being literal about it, would be ya, ha, va, ha. Yeah, definitely heavy breathing there. However, if you were to put the appropriate diacriticals in, you would end up with two syllables. Ya. And if you have a h and an u and a h, you have hu. So you could pronounce the tetragrammaton, the sacred name of God, as they call it, as Yahu. Now, that puts a whole different complexion. For instance, we have the exclamation, Yahoo! We also have the name of Joshua. So again, Yahushua. And that can also be translated to Jesus as well. But Joshua and Yahushua. So we then discover that, according to Velikovsky, this word, Yahu, the pronunciation of this word, appeared all over the world at the same time. So, my personal opinion is that this sound is the sound, or this word is the representation of the sound of the earth ringing. And I believe it made a kind of, here we go, I'm going to step back from the mic. I'm going to, a yow, wow, 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 wow kind of sound. Yod, hey, shin, va, hey. Yeah, that's Yahushua. So the pronunciation of the secret word of God is Yahoo, which is interesting because it's a website. Now they came across Yahoo. The website is named something like yet another hoary old something, and I don't know. They came up with that, but it was just to contrive it so it was Yahoo. Yes. Now we're talking. Call in if you know about the tetragrammaton and all this stuff. Yeah, I mean, as I said, the reason I know Hebrew is because I grew up and I was taught Hebrew when I was a kid. It's nothing that I didn't study or anything, but I just know it. In Canadian, Joshua's Yahoza. Hey, yeah, that's very good. So presumably, all over the world, there are words that are Yahoo. And let's see if you can come up with any. I don't know if they occur in any of the Native American languages, or in Chinese, or in India, or anything like that. Or Yao. Yeah. So, don't you think that is interesting? I think that's a very interesting little snippet. And so that's a remnant of... So perhaps, it must have been a very, very traumatic time for the people... living at the time, and presumably a vast number of people died through the action of earthquakes, tsunamis, and all that other stuff, you know, because most people live by the coast, and that would have taken up, you know, the whole Pacific Ocean would have risen up and then dropped down, and that would have potentially destroyed all of the Pacific coast, or the at least the South Indian Ocean. So we've got 15 more minutes. Come on, somebody call in. I know you're all dying to get there. That was me. So wow. That's what I say to the internet. Wow. So that's one of the the little stories that I've had that I've always wanted to talk about, and I'd really like to talk to somebody about it rather than it being more of a monologue or a bunch of interpretations. I'm yet to write the Doctor Who script. Perhaps one day, if I have to spend a long time just with me in a typewriter or a word processor. And I don't have to do radio shows every other day. I could get down to it and write a little script and send it into the BBC and see what Russell T thinks about it. He's the guy who writes Doctor Who. That's the Comet of Doom. Does anybody in the chat room have any questions? If you want to put them in the chat room rather than ask me personally. I'm logged in as wolfspirit.switchboard. What's happened? Oh, my monitor's gone to sleep. Dios. Dos. Deus. 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 Yau. Yes. Yeah, it's interesting. The Latin word for God is Deus. Dominus. Domination. Yes. Okay. Nobody's going to call me. Right. Oh, there's Queen. What's he put the Queen? What's Queenie doing in the chat room? Oh, by the way, the word Prometheus in Greek, the original Greek, would be pronounced Prometheus. So there's all this Eos business. Ah. So... Latin derivatives, yes. It is a very interesting subject, Tobias. Yeah. And so if any hosers want to call in, ya hosers. Yahoo. I really enjoyed expounding this for you, my brothers and sisters. We got about 10 minutes left in the show, and I'm starting to absolutely run dry. Things to think about. Why were the sacred... it's interesting. Sacred feminine. If that's got anything to do with this whole story. And because, like I was saying, you know, there is no... there's no Easter fertility aspect to the Passover story. It's mostly a story of disaster and heartbreak and loss. And grief, and that's more or less what we're taught, you know, that it was a really quite a sad time for the Jewish people, you could say, but I suppose that's just like a big pity party. Oh God! See, the thing is that no lightning bolt has struck me. I'm saying this, you know, I haven't been struck by lightning And I'm quite a good conductor of electricity, so if there was going to be, and I'm on the top of a hill, so nobody's, nobody, all right, Queen reflects the power of the Tetragrammaton on the planet, I see, where's that triangle, all right, but yes, so, it's not magic, it's Yahoo. Yeah, Queenie, big drug dealer, apparently, so they say, and maybe she might be busted for feeding our children all these heroin addicts, for creating all these heroin addicts over the years. It's all Queenie's fault. Do Tolek and Alex Collier agree on what I got from the Andromedas? I don't know. I haven't compared their notes. It would be interesting to get them together, wouldn't it? Don't know if they would. Yes. Yes. Now, the harmonic resonance. Now, that's a very interesting thing. Not the tetragrammaton, but the tetrahedron is a very interesting thing, because if you take two tetrahedrons and push them together, yes, that's right, Bryce, Passover is more death and Easter is more birth. Yeah, masculine and feminine sides of things. Is there an Islamic festival at this time? What do the Islamics do? Anyone know? But apparently, if you take a tetrahedron, star tetrahedron, have two tetrahedrons interlinked with each other in a sort of skeleton form, if you shine a light on it, I can't remember the reference, but I'm sure one of you guys in the chat room knows about this, that if you shine a light through a star tetrahedron, and you turn it round very carefully, you can make with the shadow all of the Hebrew alphabet. So I'm told. And so there is a link between the star tetrahedron and the Hebrew alphabet in the ancient form, not the modern sort of scripty form, which is more like a kind of almost like an Arabic thing, but those kind of squarish letters, they all have some connection with the star tetrahedron. And interesting factoid number three about the star tetrahedron is that if you turn it on its side, lay it down, it fits inside the space of a cube, and that's why they call it Metatron's cube. What's that?
Star tetrahedron is Israel's male female representation.
Yes, the upwards pointing triangle is the female, and the downwards pointing triangle is the male, and it's something to do with the shape of the pubis, the shape of the pubic hairs, like one points up triangle, one points down triangle. Don't know, it's been a long time. And there are points inside the planet. This is Hoagland's work. That's one of the things that he hasn't gotten wrong, is that there are points on the planet at 19.5 degrees, which happen to be the same angle as the points on a star tetrahedron, and that's a very interesting thing. So yes, I'm running out of words. And Masters, he's doing other things, bad or something. Yeah, that's right. You know, we all used to pray to all these beings and things. Well, I think really, that's right. Yeah, Bonnie, you're right. Use yourself. Go to your higher self. We don't need gurus. Like I say at the beginning of the program, we have to go beyond gurus, beyond teachers, and to go within and find what we have. Do what you want to do. Take away your limits. They're only self-imposed. Did I get it around the wrong way, James? Sorry. So, what is it? So, therefore, the downward pointing is female and the upward pointing is male. I suppose if you're lying down, I'd be upward pointing. Yes. male up, girl is down. I know, but it's been a long time. Let me tell you, it's been a long time. So, we've got 5 minutes left on the program. I bet somebody's going to call in now, just to be cussive. 1-775-657-5973. And we're also wolfspirit.switchboard on Skype. Call in on Skype if you do. You get a much better signal and doesn't have that sort of horrible telephony scratchy sound that people seem to like on these radio stations. Mind you. So, I have to say that I didn't see my family over the period. I haven't seen anybody. I wish my son a happy Easter today, happy Resurrection Day. I like to concentrate on the resurrection. I'm very much in the same kind of thing as Bill Hicks, in that if I was to be a member of a spiritual group, for instance, I wouldn't want to carry around an image of the device that my leader was tortured and killed on. Thoughts? you know, as Bill says, you know, you don't want people going up to Jackie Kennedy and saying, "Hey, Jackie, got the rifle? There's the rifle. There we go." Yes. So, yeah, maybe you should play another song. Skyped. Yeah, no, I was on the wrong. I'm on Wolf Spirit Switchboard, not on my own Skype. So that's why you wouldn't have gotten me. Oh no, there we are, Tobias. Right, hang on. There we go. Right. I'm going to call you now. You don't know about it because you're in the future. But Tobias is going to find out right now that I'm going to call him. Ha ha. And he's not answering. There you are. Hey, Tobias.
Hey, JP. How's it going?
All right. All right. Let me just bring you in there. Yes. So there you go. So have you got any little factoids or snippets about Easter or Passover or this whole thing?
I don't know too much about the Easter thing or where it all comes from. I just know that it's sort of like all the other holidays, that I really don't know what's commercial about it or what's, you know, biblical or what's in historical and all that. But all the stories you told make a lot of sense. I don't know how you keep it all straight.
I didn't. I rambled on about all sorts of things at different points, but I tried to follow the timeline. I did stick to the timeline.
Well, I think the thing that, if anything, I was just going to say what you already said, and that is that just the going into meditation and stuff, like even the word amen, now everybody says, oh, that means, I forget what it means, but it's not a positive thing, and so many people are talking about, you know, if you're meditating or do a prayer or whatever you do before you meditate, don't call in, you know, Archangel Michael, because they're all frauds and they're all demons or different things. And yeah, I think it was really quite accurate and true to just go within yourself, call on yourself. So I guess what I'll do after this is just, you know, go into a meditation and go, Tobias.
You never know that, because the vibration of your name is your sacred vibration, isn't it? So, yeah. You know, when somebody else calls you by your name, you can tell whether they love you or not, you know, by the way they pronounce your name. It's sacred. It's very important. And, yes, the thing about Amen is it's Amun Ra. And that's one of the names of Ra, who comes from Aldebaran, and otherwise known as Marduk, who, according to lots of people, and Robert Morningsky is one of them, he's the guy who basically brainwashed all of humanity to worship him. You know, that's when we started worshipping gods rather than just just kind of being happy being around them. So that's our program for today. I'm just going to wrap up the show. Thank you very much, Tobias, for calling in briefly and just
thank you,
just making me feel not quite so alone. And until so, we've got 2 hours now. So I'm going to play a couple of tunes, and then I'll find some. I might play another piece of Cliff High's latest thing, or if anybody's got any kind of program requests, I've got 2 hours to go to Colleen Thomas standing in for Muggsy tonight, and we are going to have my outro. Let's just play that. So, thank you very much, Tobias, for calling in. Thank
you're
you very
welcome,
much, everybody, for listening. It's been, hopefully, it's been entertaining and enlightening for you. It's certainly been a great opportunity to tell that story that I've had inside me for years. So, with that, I'll see you all next week, and happy Resurrection Day. Good night.